Now that you lowered the chair, you seem much smaller. And I feel more important because
No,
I'm
I'm
taller.
bigger.
I'm taller than you.
I'm bigger and more important, please. That's
Are you sure?
that's so cute.
Ready to start the show?
I'm ready to start.
Let's begin.
Oh, that's good. And here I turned my settings down.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is a man who requires no introduction, but demands one anyway. Mr. Neelan Tyree.
With an exclamation point. Upside down exclamation point.
Then you have to have one in the beginning and the end. If one is upside down, you have to have it at both sides. Neelan is a matchmaker, a provocateur. Provocateur? How do you say that?
Provocateur.
Provocateur. It's like low class to say that incorrectly, right?
Well, you should know.
It ruins if you use like a thing in French and then you say it.
Case in point.
Provocateur, fashionista, that's Spanish. And man about many towns. He's here on the show while he's visiting Los Angeles. We also have a special this week. This is a special audience participation show.
Oh, God.
We are going to be taking live questions from out there in podcast land during this show. We've never done this before.
That's a lie.
It's not a lie.
I should have brought my lawyer.
You already signed your rights away. In the next hour, we will find out about how Neelan keeps up the incredible pace of just being Neelan. I don't get it. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Mr. Enigma himself, Mr. Neelan Tyree.
Enigma? That sounds mysterious. There's no mystery about me.
No, that's
me.
Right.
That's
no
like, I'm like the anti-Enigma.
No, you wear it all on your sleeves.
Oh, yeah. I'm Mr. Transparent.
And your cuffs and your shoes. It's all over the place. It's a little on your chin. And
oh, good.
As a matter of fact. But yeah, that's true. You don't seem to hide anything.
No.
I mean, as far as I can tell.
What's the point?
On the other hand,
mm-hmm.
when I put out a call for questions.
You got none.
People were very curious. Everybody wants to hear more about you, meet you, get under the surface, find out what's behind the charming facade.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe it for a minute.
All right. First question. First question comes from a Ms. Joan L. in Piscataway, New Jersey.
I can't say that. Piscataway.
Here's her question. Joan says, it seems to me that the Tyree family name has a long history in this country.
Long enough.
Well, what is the Tyree family?
Well, it's a Scottish name.
Scottish.
It's derived from McIntyre.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And recently, my sister-in-law, who lives in Jacksonville, I was working for the CEO of Winn-Dixie,
okay.
who came over from Australia. But he's Scottish and from the Isle of Tyre. So it's not that Barbara Tyree wasn't already doing fabulous things, buying wines for Florida, mm-hmm. Winn-Dixie's, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
She's quite beloved.
Yep.
When he got a load of her with that name,
yes.
Oh, my God, loved her. It helped that she did an incredible job as well.
Sure.
But so, yes, it's Scottish. And then here in the U.S., we have the most hilarious family tree you've ever seen in your life. It goes way back.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
But I'm thinking that a lot of my more creative bent may come from my mother's Yankee side.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tyrees settled in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite hilarious, the family tree, because they weren't very imaginative. I remember as a kid, I looked at it and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. We had a Thomas Jefferson Tyree.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And my favorite was one little branch all by herself, never wed. I guess when you name someone Pocahontas Tyree, it sort of limits her 1800s marriage opportunities.
This is the 1800s.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we settled in Florence, Alabama, mm-hmm. which I'm still deeply proud of, and hosting our 40th high school reunion since mm-hmm. I was the class president.
Yes.
And so that's in September.
Class president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But
I would have liked to hear your stump speech.
What did you? Please.
Well, you probably still know
I'd already run for youth governor of Alabama.
Yeah.
So I was.
You're all day.
I was a nightmare.
So you're.
Did you ever see Tracy? Did you ever see the movie Election?
No.
Well, it's hilarious, with Reese Witherspoon playing a monstrous student, a control freak named Tracy.
Yeah, I think I may have seen this.
And Matthew Broderick is the principal who wants to bring her down.
Yes.
Well, I was Tracy Flick, but popular.
Okay, so you were her.
So anyway, the Tyrees are a long and distinguished family, and we rarely run into others, so I'd love to know about any Jerseys.
Other Piscataway, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're from the South. She also wants to know, so are you Tyrees, racist, white supremacist?
Good God, no.
Okay.
My God, no.
Are you Holocaust revisionists?
No.
Are you Episcopalians?
Tragically not. We're Presbyterian, which I still love, but the Episcopalians I've been drawn to in recent years because they have a much better flourish show, and the costumes are divine.
Exactly.
So Trinity Episcopal in New Orleans is the best church I've ever set my foot in.
So better costumes with the Episcopalians than – what are you, Presbyterians?
Our first Presbyterian in Florence. It was built in 1818.
They don't have any sense of humor, the Presbyterians.
Oh, no. The most important thing, the only thing you can get really in trouble for at my church was by not having a new suit on Easter. That would be shameful. But we're having our centennial that matches Florence, Alabama's bicentennial.
Okay.
So big plans next year.
Okay, we have another question. Mm-hmm. This is from a Mr. Albert G. Jr. in Fort Worth, Texas. He would like to know, who was your best friend when you were in third grade?
William Paxton.
William Paxton.
Yes, and I'm hoping he shows up for the reunion. I haven't seen him in a while. I'm sorry, Bill. He goes by Bill now.
Bill.
Sorry, he'll always be William to me.
And what do we know about Bill? What can you tell me? Remember about Bill from third grade?
William. He was redhead, and I tormented him. The biggest thing was Hot Wheels. They had a fabulous modern house. Our fathers had been best friends. Both of our mothers were redheads. And Jean was my Mama Jean because she was sort of my second mother. But he had the most splendid collection of Hot Wheels. And I would go over there for spend the night parties. First of all, Mama Jean would let us eat steaks in their master bedroom on the floor in front of their color TV in their bedroom.
Town.
I know. It was magnificent.
Decadent.
And then afterwards, they'd say, oh, please, let's set up the Hot Wheels, William. Oh, please. And he'd say, no, you never clean them up. You're a nightmare. I refuse. And I would get my way. And we would have them spread throughout the entire house. And, I mean, like loop-de-loops, you know, from dining room to living room and all around. It was like new business presentations. It was fantastic.
Do you remember, did you have a favorite Hot Wheel that you recall?
Oh, no, I just liked all of them.
Okay, yeah.
And the shiny ones, of course. Yeah. I think there was a purple Corvette. You know, metallic purple.
Yes.
But the fun thing about that was I remember one time it got quite late and we had to go to bed. And he goes, no, we've got to clean this up now. I said, we'll do it in the morning. I promise. I'm so tired. I can barely keep my eyes open. And I want to go sleep under Raquel Welch because he had this fabulous picture of her from 100 million years BC. So
the movie.
So he always had the best posters.
Yeah.
So I convinced him that we had to go to bed. And in the middle of the night, I went into Mama Jean and said, I have a stomach ache. I don't feel good. And mother came and picked me up. And I'll never forget, I was in the back seat of the country squire wood-stained station wagon in the back seat. Like,
did you feel guilty?
No. But then William came rounding the corner and Mama Jean was like, I don't know what happened to him, darling, but he just feels so ill. And I hope it wasn't from the dinner. I just hope he's all right, my dear precious. And I saw William barreling out the front door screaming, no, he's a monster. There's nothing wrong with him. He's faking. And I just sat there waving with an evil smile. Of course I was faking.
You just didn't want to clean up.
I didn't want to clean up.
All right. Well, I think that's all right. Albert G. Jr., there's your answer to the question. Our next question comes from Florence M. Olentina.
Well, I love her name.
I never heard of
Florence.
For Florence M. Olentina. She says she's at 8116 North Fields Drive, Akron, Ohio, 4431.
You shouldn't be giving her address out.
44310.
Stop that.
Well, she sent it to us.
Oh, my God. I'll send her a card.
She says, this is a clarification. You have been working for advertising agencies for your whole
career. Has been my stage.
Long time. And she wants to know, is your job more like a matchmaker between them?
Absolutely.
Or is it more like a pimp?
No, it's a matchmaker.
Because
I don't work for whore agencies. Can I say that on the radio?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Agencies. We can say it as much as we
so
want.
Dirty.
It's a dirty word.
But no, and so what I find comical is that 32 years into doing this, I'm one of the only people I know who's ever done nothing but business development. I call it business development because that's what the business world calls it. In advertising, they call it new biz, which has always pissed me off.
That's what it is for them.
It's just ridiculous. It's not new biz. It's, oh, God. Director of new biz. It's business development. Yeah. But that means that my job is to attract clients to big agencies. In the past, I was like working in a coal mine because I did everything. And at this point, I have two magnificent agencies I work for. But as I like to tell people, I've helped the best agencies in the country win some $6 billion worth of pitches over the years. And one business associate of mine, when I said that to a prospect, he's from Australia, and he goes, "Dear God, are you ever going to stop talking about $6 billion?" I'm like, "The minute it's $7 billion, and how much have you won?" So I'm very competitive.
You already said it was $7 billion, so I see you're aspiring.
I'm aspiring. I'm aspirational.
Yeah. So what? Why do you say it's a matchmaker more than a pimp? If you work for the agencies, you're representing.
No. The thing that's important, though, is that any good business dev person knows that it's as important to say no as it is to go full steam after it. Also, doing your best work, you're going to win one of four if you're operating at absolute top peak performance and you have the best talent in the world in place and you've got all missions, you know, on go. The odds of winning, it's still a very competitive world. Yeah. So the trick is, one of the things I do is try to identify the best ones. So it's,
places that would be really a good relationship.
But let me tell you the pimp version.
Yes.
And it used to make me crazy whenever you see advertising agencies, personified on TV prior to Mad Men, which I haven't seen a minute of, but I'll tell you about that in a moment. But
I'm not going to ask about that. You might not be able to tell me.
But I lost
a lot of stuff to do.
I know,
the show.
But I lost my mind when I saw on Melrose Place, which I didn't really watch because it wasn't Dallas or Dynasty. But Heather Locklear, who I otherwise like, came in and said, "We have a new business opportunity. He's going to be by in 15 minutes. Quick, chill the champagne, get the caviar." And the guy came in and he loved the champagne. And next thing you know, they had won a piece of new business. Now that's pimping.
That's pimping.
That's not how it happens.
It's not Heather Locklear's fault. They wrote those lines.
Of course. That's why I said she's fine.
Yeah, she's fine. All right. Well, okay. So more of a matchmaker, not a pimp. I did learn something in researching this question that people think that yenta means like a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm. No, it means like giving good advice.
It means something totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that. So people are using that word wrong. Florence did not, but
See the recent Bette Midler Hello Dolly, even despite my many difficulties with her.
On the table
despite my many difficulties with her over the years.
Yes,
but whatever. So she had good intentions for anybody she put together, the Dolly Levy. So that's more of a matchmaker.
Okay, all right. Of course, if we're talking about advertising, you and I met working at Chiat Day,
one of the best in the world,
in New York. In the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
A famous ad agency founded here in Los Angeles.
I worked here first.
Yep. They had an office in Venice for a long time.
Do you know why I went to the New York office?
No, but this is the question.
Okay.
The audience would like some untold story.
Oh, I've got a great one.
From your experience. And I need a scoop. You know what I mean? Like, I want a scoop on the story so you have to confess or spill the beans.
Well, it's a fun one. It's a good story, but it's not one that I've told.
Okay. Is it a little scandalous?
It's funny, okay. I think.
All right. So this,
it's my kind
of
fun.
So people who are listening who are from this community.
Well, it's not even the first of my many main name dropping, but it's a good one.
Okay.
Jay Chiat was fabulous.
Some people we've never known were going to listen to this and say, okay. Uh-huh. So
Jay Chiat was the founder, and many people considered him quite terrifying. I did not. I was so outlandish at the time. I was wearing like disco hot pants.
Yeah.
And I went through a period where I wore nothing but men's see-through shirts, some with like pearl encrusted collars. My most famous one was a pair of black shorts with daisy appliques around the bottom. The girls were furious because my shorts were shorter than the skirt requirement, but I kept screaming, "It's not a skirt."
We did get some letters in about your hot pants during these times.
Very famous.
About his hot pants.
So in any case, I was very out there.
Yeah.
When I moved to New York, I was even wearing the hot pants then. Not every day. But Jay would crack up. And one day I was wearing those shorts in.
Did you also have roller skates in mind?
No roller
skates.
You
were even taller and longer, and you had me with roller skates.
Yeah, no. I didn't need them. That would have been gilding the lily. But I also had the matching vest, and then I had the shirt with the 12-inch sequined happy face, as one does.
Yeah.
And so I'll never forget. I was
like garanimals at all.
Yeah, gay ranimals is what I call them. Yeah. Yes. So I was flip-flopping through the agency, and it was open space, of course. And Jay was at the opposite end of the building, and he never yelled at me. Everyone said I was his toy poodle because I just made him laugh. And I also got shit done. So we were fine.
Yeah.
Never barked at me until that day when he screamed, Neyland! And I looked up I remember the straight creatives were like, thank God.
Finally.
This little queen's going to get it.
Finally.
So I screamed across the agency, what do you want, old man? And he goes, those shorts. I'm like, what about them? He goes, don't you think you ought to wait till your legs aren't so pasty to wear them? Which, of course, crucified me. So that's Jay. Anyway, that's not the story.
Your legs were too white. That's not the story?
No. The story is that he and his then wife thought I was very festive. And so one time Jay came to me, which, you know, if he wants you to do something, he goes, rah, 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 do it.
Yeah,
rah.
Yeah.
This time he came and he goes, could I ask you a favor?
Uh-oh.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
Okay.
What would you like me to do? And he goes, my wife and I think it's Donatella. Donatella and I are going out tonight, and we have a very special guest, and we want to be able to entertain her and take her somewhere she probably hasn't been. And I'm like, well, where would that be? And he goes, well, you must know all the big gay discos and nightclubs. I'm like, I guess I must. So I took them on a round-the-city twirl of the most fabulous gay clubs, and they were fabulous back then. I can't even remember the names of them. I can't even remember the nights I was
late
there.
Late 80s, right?
Oh, yeah.
Early
90s. Oh, yeah. 90, yeah. Wild. And I was wearing my silver Gaspar Saldana suit that was just fantastic with an organza silver shirt. It was magnificent. And the other guest who I twirled around, it was Princess Lee Radziwill. You go! I know, right? So that was fun.
So they had a nice time.
We had a ball.
Did you get a bonus?
Oh, no. Are you crazy? You
got a red bike.
I didn't have to pay.
You got a red bike. All right. Well, that's a good story. It's not really a scoop. It's not anything scandalous. It's nothing that people are going to say like, oh, my God, I didn't know that happened.
I got to tell you, I've heard horrible stories about other people in other agencies, but I'm kind of fresh out.
Okay.
I mean, there were too many drugs.
Okay, well,
that's
advertising.
Boring.
Yeah, that's a cliche. All right, we're going to move on.
Move on.
We're going to move on. Slightly disappointing. I was hoping for something a little
If I think of something else.
From you. You might come up with
something. Well, I've got a really good one, but but I'd be in jail if I said it, so
right,
we're not doing
don't
that.
Don't say that one. We don't even know Florence, and so she's not going to get next question. The next question comes from Anonymous. Not an anonymous person, but the hacker group Anonymous sent in.
That's a lie.
And they would like to know, whoever they are, who were you in a past life? I'm not sure if you believe in past
lives. I do not, because I think this one's so fabulous that what's the point? Although I think I was an old soul from very young. So
that was the second half of the question. Are you an old soul or a young soul?
Oh, yeah. I pretty much came out fully baked. Yeah. I was a lot as a child.
I'm sure.
Yes.
You're a lot now. And you've probably slowed down a little.
Yes. And but fortunately, Alan Flowers, who is the local theatrical impresario and also my piano teacher from age 5, I was able to channel it. So my first role was as Jerome, the little Polynesian boy in South Pacific. And it was so magnificent because the girl who played Lola or whatever her name is, she and I had to take French lessons. So I got to go over to the Craig house like several times a week and learn French so we could sing Dites-moi pourquoi, all that. It was magnificent. And then on dress rehearsal, I wore a sarong and they covered my body with Egyptian #9 body makeup. Makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah, from head to toe. So I looked like you. It was fantastic.
Swarthy. I had a boss once who referred to me as swarthy, and I was not sure.
That sounds kind of dirty,
didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I was brown skinned, and they dyed my hair with shoe polish. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
So you're an old soul, but you don't think that you have had a past life.
Well,
think you're gonna have any future lives, or you think this is it?
No, this is it.
This is it.
Because that's what inspires me. It's like, that's why I didn't die 20 years ago with HIV, because I was like, I'm not done. I've got things to do. Right.
So this is, you got to burn it all now in this.
Yeah, I got to go out. Okay. Got to go out big.
All right. So Anonymous, sorry, no past lives, no future lives. This is it.
This is it.
Got you. You're pedal to the metal this lifetime. All right.
I want to bust into Sondheim's I'm Still Here Now, but I won't do it to your listeners.
Yeah, good. Thank you. To me. This next question is very important.
Okay.
And it comes from your mother.
That's a lie. She's not on Facebook.
And her question is, What is it with you and moving house?
Oh.
You've moved
a million times.
That's not an exaggeration.
My cousin Jane.
I moved to L.A. 7 years ago. You were here, you left, you came back, and you left again in the 7 years that I've been here.
I'm busy.
I know, but what the hell's going on?
Okay, you know what it is?
Wait, where do you live now? Jacksonville, Florida.
Part of the time. And so I go where my clients are. Yep. So I've got a fantastic client. Can you hear those horns? Are we
in the recording?
Is there no? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. No, later on.
Are there more riots?
No, it's just a fire truck. But later on, when people listen and you say, "I have my clients," and then they hear the horns, they're going to subconsciously, you know, get a message like "clients emergency."
So St. John and Partners is my agency. Tremendous people and some of the nicest people I've ever worked with. But that doesn't mean boring. I mean, nice and hilariously fun to
and
be
where
with.
Where are they?
They're in Jacksonville.
Yeah, they're in Jacksonville.
And they have field offices all over the Southeast. They're fantastic. But then out here in Los Angeles, I work with the Propeller Group.
Okay.
Which I'll maybe mention a little bit more about later if you want to know. But they're extraordinary. We own 150,000 square feet of the best Hollywood studios in the business. And my job is to attract consumer brands to them. So it's really all quite exciting. Okay. And we just had a huge new win, which I can't tell you about.
So now you're kind of bi-coastal.
I'm bi-coastal. But also, I was... The way I can sum it up.
Yeah, why? Why?
The question I'm Mary Poppins, okay? My job is to go into an agency and get those misbehaving children to behave well and present well and then to attract people to them. Okay, that's my job. Sometimes it has worked tremendously, like with J. Walter Thompson. I worked for two global CEOs and was in and out of there for 12 years. Thank God for Bob Jeffrey, who is now the chairman. But I was one of his go-to people. And I'm seeing Wendy North, who was his creative services woman. And so we were the first ones to get calls for new business opportunities. And if he would send me packing, off I would go. So
you're Mary Poppins.
And I was Mary Poppins. And okay. so if I was at an agency, if things were going very well, then there's a capacity point when you can only win so much.
Sure.
And then you have to dial it down. And then I would just leave.
And go someplace else.
All right. And then I would sometimes go places and it would be crapper. And they would hate me or I would hate them and it would not work. I can think of a few examples. In one case, I won too much business. The people who were there hated me for it because I did it in 45 days. And it was a $150 million global piece of business and none of them wanted to work on it. Well, we won it and then they had to work on it because I fish them, they clean them. You know, and so they wanted to show me that I didn't know anything about new business. After all, that it was all like a happenstance. So the thing is that my desire was never to climb the corporate ranks and to wind up as president of anything one day. My job is to be productive and see results from that. And if it's not working, away I go.
Okay, I buy all that. Uh-huh. But when I talk to you, you just seem like, oh, it's time for me to move. You know, you seem like you're excited.
One of the best quotes in the world, of course, is all those who wander are not lost.
Are not lost, yeah.
Okay.
All right. So in the past 10 years, where have you lived?
Well, I can say in the last 30 years, years, I've been under my own Bermuda Triangle between Los Angeles, New York, and the South.
The South. All right.
So, and the trick is, though, I'm so obnoxious that when I've been living in L.A., sometimes I never shut up about the South. For example, I used to host the best Alabama football parties when I lived on top of the Hollywood Tower. We had this magnificent space there. So I was well known for being Alabama. So I wouldn't shut up about the South. Whenever I've been in New York, I wouldn't shut up about L.A. Blah, blah, blah. Hollywood, 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 Hollywood.
I'm sure that made you very popular.
And whenever I was in the South, I wouldn't shut up about New York.
All right. Well, that seems good. All right. Our next question is from your third grade teacher.
Okay.
Who was that, by the way? Do you recall?
My first grade teacher was fantastic. That was Miss Murray. My second grade teacher was Mrs. Knowles. She wasn't as Mary Tyler Moore as Mrs. Murray, but she was very nice. And Mrs. Van Pelt, she's the one who didn't like me.
Third grade. Mm-hmm. That's who this is from.
Oh, good.
And maybe that explains her question, Mrs. Van Pelt. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I never ran away from home.
Never ran away?
No, I left. I mean, I would go... My mother would take me to Washington, D.C. every April for the cherry blossoms because she had family there. I always thought it was because I was the prince of the family. My elder brother was not invited and my little sister was not invited because it was me. It's all about me. So I thought it was great. In fact, I would, in first day of school, they would say, get up and tell about yourself. And I'd say, I'm Neelan Tyree. My father's an architect. That's very hard to spell. My mother plays bridge, and I'm an only child. I play the piano, and I'll be starring as Charlie Brown, and you're a good man, Charlie Brown, and at Gingerbread Playhouse.
You're an only child, though.
And I'd say I was an only child. And one teacher said, child, could you please stand up? It was Miss Ella Faye Jones. And she said, what's this business? I know you're loved to parents, and your mother does far more than play bridge. But I must ask you about this business of your being an only child. How could that be? I said, yes, ma'am, I am. She said, that's fascinating. Fascinating, I tell you, because I had your brother in this class 2 years ago, and I saw you giving lunch money to your little sister this morning. How do you explain that? I said, that's easy. I'm the only one that matters. And they don't dispute it. My brother and sister laugh to this day. They think it's just fine.
They think it's hilarious.
They could care less.
So you never ran away from home?
No, but they would let me run wild through D.C., like in the fifth and sixth grades. They would drop me off, and I'd go shopping and come back with Nehru jackets and bell-bottoms and puff sleeves and suede boots and fringe coats. Oh, it was fantastic.
So you didn't have to run away?
I didn't have to run away, but I would run wild through the streets of D.C. at least once a year.
Your parents were lax, and they
was a different world.
They let you run wild, so you didn't, you didn't have to run away. All right, so you didn't ever, like, get a little bindle on a stick and run out and go to the neighbor's house?
No need.
You weren't a rebellious child?
No. Oh, well, the parents all thought I was the perfect child, but I was the ringleader of getting everybody else in trouble.
Well, that's what your friend William, because he's a monster. He's a monster, yes.
Well, and with Greg Whitten and Mark Barley, ask them. They were none too pleased because we would get caught either water ballooning police cars or egging someone's house or whatever, running wild through the neighborhood. And then we'd be caught. And then I would be standing there with my bangs and my sandals and my mock turtleneck.
And short pants.
And Greg and Mark would be like, he did it. And the parents to the one would say, there is no way that precious child had anything to do with this. Y'all are a terrible influence. And they would be beaten and dragged away. And I would skip home and go play the piano.
That's good. All right. No need to run away from home. Okay, now we've gotten to a place in the show. Let's see, how much time do we have? Oh, we're doing pretty well here. All right, we're doing pretty well.
Why, you already worn out?
No, you're not talking too much anywhere near I thought what you would. So you're doing very well.
Good behavior.
You said you were going to listen to a few of the shows, mm-hmm. but you didn't really do that.
I decided that I didn't want to be guilty of copying.
I understand.
And I also want to enjoy them for their own magnificence.
I understand.
And not treat it like a focus group.
Yeah, I understand. Thing. All right. Well, I have a question that I ask everybody on the show. And this week, this question is a special question. It is sponsored by the Bunny Museum in Pasadena, California. Have you ever seen the Bunny Museum?
But I'll be going immediately.
It is.
Are you kidding? Is it real bunnies or is it things about bunnies?
It's a private home that is literally stuffed to the gills with every
on my way.
Stuffed bunny, ceramic bunny planter out in the yard.
On my way.
Things stuck to the refrigerator, corkscrews. You know, it's unbelievable. I don't know how these people live in the house.
Well, here's my previously favorite.
But especially at Easter, that place is jam-packed with people
wanting
to see literally tens of thousands of bunny icons around the house for this couple.
All of you out there in the dark, meet me at the bunny house.
So they're the sponsors
of
this question this week. We have a different sponsor for the question. Some people know that I have had this thing for a long time about giving people permission to hit me in the face with a pie.
Oh, yes.
Right? And I do it because people really love it, and they get to throw it with love, and I receive it with love, and it's different than how pies are usually thrown at people.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is this. You're going to do this. You're mm-hmm. going to give one person permission to hit you in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer, hit you in the face with a pie. The question is this. You get to pick anyone.
Mm-hmm. I've got it.
In life.
Oh, yeah.
Who would you like to be the person to throw that pie?
Oh, that's so easy. I can't even tell you. There's a friend of mine in New York who's one of my very best friends. And we work together at several agencies many, many times.
Okay.
I have driven him out of his mind over the years. Okay.
Are you gonna give him a shout out right now?
Setting it up. But at one point, I would frequently twirl around Manhattan and, you know, next thing you know, I'd meet some stranger on the street and we'd be having Negronis somewhere and we'd be laughing and ha ha ha. And then something magnificent would come about it. And I lived above Barney's downtown and he lived over in London Terrace. So I would usually skip over there to tell him all about my new best friend. I had so many new best friends that I called them my NBFs. And one day, he's a very big guy. One day, his name is Jeff Streeper.
Jeffrey Streeper.
He has worked with Annie Leibovitz for some 30 years and worked at some of the best agencies in the world. We met at Merkley Newman Hardy. No, he's a graphic designer, creative director. Insanely talented.
Okay.
Just is the best eye in the business of anybody. Big guy. And one day I was carrying on about this, blah, blah, blah. Oh, it's my most fabulous new best friend, my NBF. He goes, stop it, stop it, stop it. I am your best friend. I have to put up with your crap all the time for good or ill. I am your best friend. These other people are what the rest of us freaking call strangers. You are insulting me and everybody else who is actually your friend, and you need to knock it off.
Cut it out.
So Jeff Streeper, and he would kill to have that. In fact, I'm probably going to, when I see him in New York, I'm going to give him that real opportunity.
Okay. Well, I I've done this so often, it may not surprise you that I've formed a kind of spiritual movement.
About pie throwing?
No, about pie receiving.
Oh, pie receiving.
Because the moment is when you realize a pie is coming at your face.
You see the world.
All of your lizard brain things flash, you know, your life flashes, right? And all you want to do is yell stop or duck or punch that person in the face. But if you could have that moment to smile and inhale and say,
oh,
yes,
I will.
Yes, and receive it. It's an amazing thing. So so I have this – it's a spiritual movement. It's called Pie Yourself Free. Maybe Robin Danielson actually named it that.
Did she?
I believe
did.
She
you have
did.
To pay her $100,000?
No, we're friends.
Go, Robin.
We're friends.
Well, she deserves $100,000
for
that.
I wrote a nice recommendation letter for her to get into the Harvard Divinity School.
Oh, that'll work.
So we're even.
Okay.
you can follow Pie Yourself Free on Facebook or Twitter. But I have these little cards, and it says, it's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime without warning. I'm giving one to you, so you could hit me anytime, but you can give this to Jeffrey.
I'll give this to Jeff. I'm not going to run around with a 500 of these.
No, you're just going to give it
to
one.
I'm going to give it to Jeff.
Yeah, give it one. On the front of it is a picture of a 91-year-old auntie hitting me in the face with a pie. It was a tasty cake lemon pie.
That's like a small pie.
It's a small pie, but yeah, that's the first day it happened.
You look like Billy Crystal here. What's up with that?
I'm getting hit in the face with a pie. I had hair. It was the 90s.
Let me tell you about Jeff. One time when I had some problems with IRS or whatever, and I told him I was very worried about going to prison, he said, what's to worry about? You'll be fine. I'm like, you mean they won't send me to prison? He goes, no, I don't mean that at all. I mean, maybe you can finally get a date again.
You'll be very popular.
Yeah, that's he's dying to hit me in the face with a pie.
Well, Jeffrey, you have now been greenlighted to hit Neilan in the face with a pie anytime and without warning.
He's probably going to put a file in it, so it'll do some real damage.
You realize you only want to say this is open season to friends and family because, mm-hmm. you know, we trust that people aren't going to put a file in it or do it at an inappropriate moment. Although, you know.
I'm going to leave it up to Jeff.
All right. But I ask every guest gets this question, and you're going to have Jeff.
Hit me in the face with a pie.
All right. And so.
I'll send you evidence.
Evidence, video. It's a research project. I'll be curious what happens for you. How is it for you and how is it for him? And you can post it on the Facebook page.
Well, he's so deserving of the opportunity that I'm sure it will be an enriching experience.
All right. Well, we'll have to loop him in. We're going to have to loop him out. Here's something else I like to ask people. You have a somewhat quirky bedtime or sleeping ritual. What is it?
Lining up my 4.5 cats and making sure that everybody is where they need to be. I run a tight house with those cats. It's like The Sound of Music, and I'm the Christopher Plummer part. They even eat lined up. And when it's bedtime, maybe this is why I'm single. But I have 4 black cats, and Ira likes to need, you know, the blanket. So he's right here. Cole likes to dance. Ira and George Gershwin and Cole Porter and Noel Coward are my 4 black cats.
Yeah.
Who's gay? Gay? Who's gay? And then George is the big alpha cat. So he sits at the foot of the bed to guard and protect. And Noel sort of skirts around somewhere. Now, mind you, they're only there for a few minutes, and then they bug off and do whatever. They go to their rages, their wherever they're.
So you said 4.5 cats.
Well, no one's got 5. That would be ridiculous. But I went out and got the 2 brothers that I got, 2 in Hollywood and 2 in Alabama. The Hollywood ones I'd seen on TV And
four is the limit. You know, if you get, if you're over four, mm-hmm. you become the crazy cat lady.
That's why I have 4.5, because that's crazy. But then Little Black Betty Blam de Blam discovered us. She was a little feral cow print.
Okay.
So 4.5.
She's a half. So that's as crazy as it gets around the house for you at bedtime?
Well, at age 58.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Then.
You aren't asking me to go back in time.
No, I'm not asking you to go back in time. But it's a bedtime or sleeping ritual. You know, I mean, some people have things.
Well, it's not like I have a choice.
What do you mean?
I mean, the cats are there.
Well, you could not feed them. I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would bug off them. All right, so there's something else I'd like to do here.
Yes.
Which is to anagram things.
Oh, God, my mother's the queen of anagrams.
You know, if you take the letters of a word or phrase and then you switch it around, it makes some other stuff. And, you know, sometimes what you get is illuminating, to say the least. So I first anagrammed your name, Neil and Tyree. Read this.
These are real? Eatery Linen. I was a waiter and bartender for many, many years. One of the best in New York. So that makes sense.
Eatery Linen. See? You know, yeah. Neil and Tyree, Eatery Linen. How about this one?
Oh, I've got an internal eye.
Internal eye.
Oh, yes.
You said something earlier about all seeing something, all knowing.
Well, not all anything. Well, I mean, that, even I won't say that. But the thing about new businesses.
I think you meant it rhetorically.
Yeah. I mean, well, for an internal eye is what I do for agencies.
Internal eye.
It's absolutely appropriate. So right. I love that.
No, Neil and Tyree, internal eye. Like, you could even make that.
Oh, your, these are hilarious.
Your new company name. Now, what about this next one?
The next one, you have no idea.
Well, the next one, lay internee. I think you must have done that.
I didn't know I had.
You didn't know that you knew got laid? Or that
until there was this very cute friend on Facebook.
Yes.
Whom I'd met through friends. I'd never met him. And but I would be like giving winks and nods, and I knew he had a boyfriend, but he was so charming and funny that he was very attractive. Lives here in LA. And at one point I disagreed with something he said, and I said, I am taking you off my man crush list. You are no longer my parallel universe boyfriend. We're done, we're through, you know, blah blah blah. I get a note from him. It's
not so fast.
Not so fast. I'm like, what do you mean? And he wrote me, because you don't remember? I'm like, what? He goes, when I was an intern at ... And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because this was after Bill Clinton and all of that stuff.
So you had laid, and you have laid.
Wasn't quite that bad. If this said fooled around internee.
All right, but lay internee.
But
okay,
the worst part is that I had just no memory of it. And he brought it all fully back to home.
How much later?
Oh, my God.
10 years?
Oh, 2002.
All right.
15 years.
15 years later. It is a little embarrassing when you...
I'm a cad.
When you are, you know, have sex with somebody and then you meet them later.
Well, what my best friend Susan Beckett cannot stop laughing about, because I called her immediately and said, I'm just a nightmare. She's conservative, gorgeous, smart, best friend in Florence that I've known all my life. And she loves when I'm an idiot. So I had to call and announce this to her.
We all do.
I know. Well, the worst part of it was, so I called and she couldn't stop laughing. She goes, I didn't know you were so trashy. And I'm like, neither did I. She goes, oh, you had a better idea than I do. Not 1 week later, I did the same thing with another friend on Facebook. I'm like, oh, you're so funny. You're so cute, blah, blah, blah. And he wrote back. It was somebody else. I didn't know.
Twice in a week.
Twice in a week. And that was from 1989.
You should keep a better scorecard. Neil and Tyree, lay internee. I think we got that one.
Oh, and I've already covered off this next one.
This next one, tan eyeliner. Are you wearing tan eyeliner?
No,
right now?
But when I played Jerome in South Pacific, I most certainly had tan eyeliner. Boom for the win.
All right, moving on. See, that's why the bell is there.
To shut me up.
Well, yeah, probably.
Everybody's going to be buying bells now.
They're run on bells. Holocaust shelters.
That's,
no.
Oh, the only time that Jay Shite, the only time Jay Shite really did get mad at me, he would always have me in the brainstorming sessions because God knows what I would come up with.
Exactly.
And we were having one for Energizer batteries, and they were going to be doing flashlights, and I was coming up with things. And this is back in '85 or '86 or '87 or something like that. And I said, "Oh, we should do a whole collection for the LGBT community. It'd be fantastic. We can do the fireman. We can do the lumberjack log." And I just was going off.
Yeah, just go off.
And Jay turned to me and he goes, shut up, shut up, shut up. And I said, what? I said, you can't tell me to shut up. He goes, what? And I said, no, it's in your little book. It says, there's no such thing as a bad idea. He goes, that's not a bad idea. That's a spectacularly bad idea. Get out. Oh, and then I said, I had some worse ones. You wouldn't even believe. He goes, what? And I said, well, you didn't even know I had an edit button, did you? He goes, you don't have an edit button. Get out. I hope it didn't wreck your microphone.
No, that was actually quite contained. Well, speaking of that, I also anagrammed Shiat Day Advertising.
Well, before I even look at that.
Yes.
Freaking spell check. I was started off as a copy typist, okay? And they just didn't know what to do with me, so they put me over there. And then we won Nissan, and I had to type all those things with Jackie.
A typewriter.
Mm-hmm. With Virginia Trujillo, who was the lovely, lifelong copy proof typewriter, and Susan Johnston Mercy, our fabulous proofreader. And they just threw me into those two poor women, and they were like, whatever. And doing that freaking pitch, which was, we were never supposed to win it. Never.
What pitch is this?
Nissan. Mm-hmm. When do you have any idea how many memos and how many times I had to write this? I would do Shiat Day, Nissan, and it would go cheat insane, cheat insane, cheat insane.
Well, that's spell check. Spell check is also a higher wisdom.
No, you know? they're the darkest of depravity. They're worse than Steve Bannon.
It's like a parallel universe. I wrote to somebody the other day that I hate spell check, and it changed it to spell dick. And so my message said, I hate spell dick. And he wrote back and said, yeah, spell dick sucks.
So he's not speaking to you anymore.
No, it's great. It was actually very funny. Shiat Day Advertising Anagrams. Here's one. Read that one, please.
Vacated a ditzy hiring.
That must have happened during your time. You hired somebody that was cute, and after a short period of time, you realized this person is good looking, but they just can't cut it.
Not at Shiat.
No?
No.
No, they didn't care if you were competent. They just cared if you were cute.
No, we didn't hire anybody ditzy. No, seriously. The only thing that caused a revolution was here in Los Angeles when we moved out to the fabulous original, you know, the Venice location,
binocular.
Not the Playa.
Yeah,
the binocular building.
Yeah.
Frontier building. And I was, you know, commuting. I had a piece of crap car, and I made nothing. But they put me in new business, so I got overtime. And I wouldn't even take a job. I was a freelancer. But
Ditzy hiring. What do we?
Maybe I'm the ditz.
You're going off. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm not. But so
you're
I was poor.
Off.
Poor, poor, poor.
Yes.
We were all poor. They didn't overpay us there.
No.
Okay. But suddenly we had this new crop of receptionists. Stunning, gorgeous, dumb as planks. And they all drove BMWs and Mercedes and whatever. And we were outraged because they were like spoiled sons of bitches who had been given this job. And they did nothing all day while we were sharecropping. You know, we were pushing plows past that stupid reception. We all hated them. So that's the only ditzy hire.
Vacated a ditzy
hire. They didn't
hire.
Do that after that.
All right. They didn't do that anymore. So that made sense. How about this one? Activate a dry shindig.
That means no booze.
I know.
That
never
happened.
That never happened.
Never happened.
Never
happened.
It's the opposite of what
now,
happened to Shiat
Day. On that note, I would come and go. So yeah. If I wouldn't get a raise, I would leave and go work at Ruben Poster or something like that. And then they would call me back. And then I would want more money. So that's the way I started doing it. But I still wouldn't take a job.
Yeah.
And then one time I was arguing for pay, and I put an odometer on my belt because I had to run around so much.
A pedometer. Yeah, pedometer.
Pedometer. And I said, well, then I want to be paid by the mile.
Yeah.
And I came up with a thing, and Barbara Stoller, to her credit, was in charge of HR, and she also, get out.
I want to be paid by the mile.
So that didn't work. But then every time I left, they'd have a going away party for me. And one year it got so out of hand. It was when I was going to every Blonde Ambition tour when Madonna was doing that one. And I went to the dress rehearsal with all the celebrities, you know, at Universal. It was fantastic. And I just lost my mind over Vogue. And for my going away party, I didn't know anything about it. And I came and somebody distracted me. And then we came into the space and they had two planners and two account people, like the young ones. Dressed up wearing garters and conical bras and writhing to Vogue, and the party just went haywire. It went sideways fast. It was the best going away party ever. I think it was like my eighth. And
yeah, I like that. Every time I left, they had a going away party. One year. Yeah, it was like annual.
And so, it went on.
Neil and party.
Annual, we lost track.
I'm leaving now.
Oh, and I went back several times after that. Yeah. But the day after the party, Jay sent out an agency-wide memo that said, we wish Neil the best. We think he's probably going to be back. But I'm here to tell you, anyone who spends one penny or 1 second on another going away party for him is fired. Okay? That was a fabulous party, but we don't need to have any more going away parties for Neil and Tari as long as he draws breath.
As long as he's here. All right. So activate a dry shindig. Never happened.
Never happened.
This one. Read that, please.
A Dadaist retching Ivy.
A Dadaist retching Ivy. I think.
Oh, that's talking about some of the creatives there.
That's more likely than activating a dry shindig. Yeah.
Oh, no. I can think of a few.
Yeah. Dadaist retching
I can think of a few impossible creatives. That, uh-huh. Yeah, I got one in mind.
Them. You want to name him or her?
Oh, why not? Actually, there were two.
A Dadaist retching.
And I like them, okay? But they were.
Alan Platt comes up for me.
No. These guys were both enormously talented, and I do like both of them. But they didn't make any friends when they showed up at the same time in New York. And that would be Dick Sittig and Dick Sabian. And, of course, they were the two Dicks. And they retched a lot of Ivy.
Okay. Dadaist retching Ivy. See?
But I commend both for brilliant careers.
It all comes around. It all comes around. All right. We got a couple more because we're running out of time.
Oh, God.
And, you know, and we don't want to do that.
It's just a shame this isn't on TV because I have a face made for radio and a voice made for silent pictures. Yes.
This one, yeah.
Are these for real?
Yes.
It advances gingery.
Gingerly. Gingery.
Yeah, so does that mean like a world full of Prince Harrys? Because that would be hot.
Next question. I anagrammed Tulane University.
Okay.
Because you went there.
As one of my five schools, ultimately.
Okay. And there's one thing that came out that I'm sure must have applied during your reign there.
Oh, God, yes. Hell to the yeah.
Well, read it, please.
Inane, silvery tutu. Not precisely a tutu.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things you learn fast in New Orleans. Now, mind you, I'd never lived anywhere but Florence, Alabama. Yeah. I later asked my parents, what were they thinking when they thought it was such a fine idea to send me off to New Orleans for my first unchaperoned extended period of time? Because you learn to do costumes fast. And you're doing them all the time. My most outlandish costume, and I was like all kinds of things, like a disco alligator during Mardi Gras. But for the Mardi Gras event that was most appalling, my best friend Christy Teets and I, we had the charming idea, as freshmen and sophomores will. I was Disco Jesus. It was 1977, 78. So I had a 6-foot silver cross. And my crown of thorns was made out of Christmas lights. And I had a silver lamé, tutu-esque sort of loincloth.
Loincloth.
I was barefoot, and I had a charge card thing on my waist saying, buy your way to heaven on an easy payment plan, walking down Bourbon Street with people either loving it or throwing rocks at my head. They actually cut the top of my feet, which came in handy. And we went in, and all my sorority girlfriends crucified me there in the Royal Sonesta Ballroom. And they had me up leaning against a wall. And then next thing I know, the mayor's wife, Mayor Landrieu's wife, was hysterical, furious, and cussing me out while my girlfriends were washing my feet and drying it with their hair. It was just really bad. And then what I did not tell her was that her husband was making out with one of my girlfriends under one of the ballroom tables. So I really didn't think she had any moral authority over me. Oh, yeah.
The mayor.
Oh, yeah.
With the sorority girl.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so inane silvery tutu.
I think that qualifies.
You went right to the disco Jesus. I'm glad you had some stigmata. How did your feet get cut? People threw bottles at you?
Or I was walking through glass. Who knows?
All right.
You don't walk barefoot on Bourbon Street.
No.
I was 18.
I wouldn't want to do that. But inane silvery tutu, I knew that that would be a winner. I saw that. I said yes. Now, there's just a couple more here that I've done. I don't want to spoil the surprise. So I'm going to.
You put a lot into these things.
You know, this is my job. I'm the host of the show. People expect something professional from me.
I do.
I'm not sure why they expect that.
You were a planner, for God's sake.
Here's the last three things. I still am. Broadway show.
Uh-huh.
Anagrams to this.
Wayward hobos.
That's just right on.
That's
right?
Actors.
It's just right on the nose.
Yeah, even successful actors I know. I told you, I'd met Patti LuPone once.
Yeah, wayward.
They're like hobos.
Wayward hobos.
Wayward hobos. Even if they're wildly famous and rich and what have you, They're wayward hobos.
Yes.
And I mean that with love and affection.
I understand. So that makes perfect sense. Broadway show, wayward hobos. The other thing, Broadway show anagrams to this, a shadowy brow.
That, too, is quite relevant. You may recall when I did a concert at Carnegie Hall while I was at Shy Day New York.
Yes.
That was a big hit.
Yes.
And I had a big band, a small combo, jazz combo.
Wait, at the big Carnegie Hall?
Or? At the Wild Recital Hall when it first opened.
Next door.
So I've seen the 300,
yeah,
sold out in minutes.
I understand.
Uh-huh. And then we had, I was so full of myself that, because Liza Minnelli, I'd sung for her at her birthday party when I was there with the B-52s. I told you I'd get some name dropping.
Yeah,
in.
I get it. All right.
And
that's why
I got up and sang for Liza, which nobody does, apparently. They'd wanted Katie Lang or the Bees to get up, and they all pointed at me and said, he'll do it. And I looked fabulous. I was wearing this black and white gingham check Versace, suit. So why not? And I sang Eliza's song, which apparently you don't do. But she loved it so much. Found out it was my birthday. It was her closing night. That's right. And it was my birthday. Uh-huh. And she got up and did the whole happy birthday, whatever. And then the next night
I
went to the tattoo club. And the maitre d' came over and said, I hear you're the Liza Minnelli's favorite singer in New York. And I was like, I am. Of course I am. They had me come up and do Night and Day. And then from that, somebody in the audience was my old client from the Beverly Hills Hotel and one of my old bosses from the New Yorker. And they hired me to do an event in Manhattan. And that's why I was like, forget advertising. And then did a show off Broadway. So the way I got a shadowy brow.
Yes.
And the New York Times reviewed my lovely off-Broadway show.
Yes. What did they say?
He talks and sings. When he isn't a lesser Tommy Tune,
yeah.
Oh, God, he talks and sings with a seasick monotone that echoes Tallulah Bankhead. Ouch.
Not known for her singing.
So the Carnegie Hall was a big hit, and the off-Broadway show was a big flop. So, yes, it gave me a very shadowy brow.
Well, I did a little research about the show because I remember you did the show, and I did see the thing in the New York Times. But there was one other review that I managed to unearth from the Orlando Sentinel around that time. And Mr. Peter C. from Northampton, Massachusetts, actually sent it in because it was hard for me to find it. And anyway, the quote was just one line from the Orlando Sentinel. It says, my doctor said I can only have 2 eggs a week, and this is one of them.
That's pretty good.
That was the other review.
That's excellent. The way I celebrated after it was over, my all family thought I was going to, commit suicide or something because, it's a little appalling. It was a bad review. But, it lives on, and I did my show. Did you? Whatever.
Yeah, sure.
So, but in order to let them know that I was just fine and dandy, I got this book called No Turn Unstoned.
Uh-huh.
And it was a collection of the worst reviews ever. And my favorite one from that was also about Tallulah Bankhead. It was Dorothy Parker's shortest review of all time. Mm-hmm. And it said, last night, Tallulah Bankhead got on her barge as Cleopatra and sailed down Broadway and promptly sank. 2 Tallulah Bankhead references. And you know she's from Alabama.
I did not know.
There you go.
With a name like Tallulah Bankhead. Well, we're pretty much out of time. And you personally have not rung the bell.
Oh, then I should have just been doing this the whole time.
All right, that's enough. I would like to thank my guest, the peripatetic Neil and Tyree, for coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv.
They're very sturdy and easy on the eyes.
They are easy on the eyes. They're so easy. I came in last week and it was missing.
No.
And I was aghast that someone could have borrowed or stolen. So I left a note, please return it, and it has now shown up, no questions asked. It's a nice mug.
Well, I'll buy several, and maybe I'll raffle them off to my own Facebook book listeners.
We'll see. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
ComedyDeathStar@acsdigital.tv. If you want a Comedy Death Star coffee mug. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You don't know him. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week.
When I have $7 billion in wins.
And 6 cats.